content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. We're going to resume with articles from the Spring 2020 issue, Find Your Voice, North Carolina Government, Politics, and You. And the first article is the Tar Heel Junior Historians Magazine article contest winner is the secondary division, Let Me Be Brave in the Attempt by Luke Crawford. Luke, as a member of SEED, History Seekers, Garner Area Homeschoolers, Garner, Renee Wimberly, and Jennifer Crawford, Advisors, was the winner of the 2019 Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine Article Contest, Secondary Division. Let me win, but if I cannot win, let me be brave in the attempt. This is the motto for the Special Olympics all around the United States and in North Carolina. The existence and success of the Special Olympics of North Carolina is a local issue that is extremely important to me. I have been helping my older brother with special needs to participate in the Wake County chapter of the North Carolina Special Olympics for several years now. He has competed in both the Winter and Spring Games. Special Olympics is a worldwide group that sponsors the playing of sports and games for those with both physical and mental disabilities. Special Olympics was established in 1968 and was developed for both children and adults to participate in Olympic-style games. It was started by Eunice Kennedy Shriver, the sister of President John F. Kennedy. The first North Carolina Special Olympics competition was held in North Carolina in 1970. It was created using fundraisers, private money donations, and money from companies. Last year was the 50th anniversary of the International Special Olympics, but the 50th anniversary of the North Carolina Special Olympics was in 2020. In 1981, Richard LaMunyon created the Torch Run in Kansas. The Torch Run began in North Carolina in 1987. It started with 6 police officers and has grown to have more than 80,000 police officers participating today. The Torch Run is the main fundraiser for the Special Olympics. Police officers take turns running relays and passing the Flame of Hope torch for 16 days to raise money and awareness for the Special Olympics. In North Carolina, it starts in eastern North Carolina and western North Carolina, and meets in Raleigh to light the torch for the beginning of the Special Olympics opening ceremony in Raleigh. Police officers also do other fundraisers for the Special Olympics, such as polar plunges, plane pulls, and over the edge. North Carolina is currently one of the largest Special Olympics programs in the world. There are approximately 40,000 athletes registered to compete in North Carolina. There are 19 official sports, and some of them are skiing, bowling, soccer, cycling, and gymnastics. I have helped my brother to participate in basketball, ball toss, track and field, and events where he kicks the ball. Special Olympics inspires thousands of people to open their hearts to a wider world to help athletes with disabilities discover talent and potential, and for volunteers and coaches to experience compassion and inclusion. These are people we are talking about. They should be treated as important, and they should be treated fairly. It's about focusing on the ability, not the disability. It's not a duty or a charity. It is a joy. It is important to continue to support Special Olympics because of all the joy it brings. Sometimes in life, those with disabilities don't get much joy out of anything else. In a lot of situations, those with mental challenges are frowned upon or barely tolerated, but in Special Olympics, they are celebrated. They find a place where they are welcomed. My brother has been encouraged, hugged, high-fived, and applauded by volunteers who are strangers. They see the person, not the diagnosis. That brings out the best in them. both the athletes and the volunteers. Because this is so important to myself and my family, I plan to volunteer in these games and help it grow. I want others to realize how important it is. In honor of the 50th anniversary of the North Carolina Special Olympics in 2020, I will write a letter to my state representative to encourage financial and awareness support for these games. I would also like to make t-shirts for siblings such as myself to support Special Olympics athletes. Siblings support Special Olympics. These activities give them continuing opportunities to develop physical fitness, demonstrate courage, experience joy, and participate in sharing gifts, skills, and friendship. When you support Special Olympics of North Carolina, you're not just helping them, you are helping yourself. Here's a Think About It sidebar article. Kids can't vote, but don't let that stop you. There are many ways to find your voice and help your community, state, and country. Here are a few ways to inspire you. Can you think of more? Find a cause you care about. Volunteer with an organization like Special Olympics. Volunteer with a political campaign. Ask a parent or teacher to help you find out how. Help with voter registration. Watch or read the news. Learn as much as you can about the government and the world. Look for a project that your Tar Heel Junior Historian Association Club can get involved with. Study history. When you know a lot about the past, it will make you a better citizen today and in the future. There's an associated article called The Special Olympics. The Special Olympics was started in 1968 by Eunice Kennedy Shriver, sister of President John F. Kennedy. It grew from a backyard project into the world's largest sports organization for people with intellectual disabilities. Today, there are more than 4.9 million athletes in 172 countries with more than 1 million volunteers. The painting shown here is hanging in the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, D.C. It shows Shriver with five individuals with intellectual disabilities who had been involved in the program. The boy on the right is from North Carolina. Marty Sheets, born in 1958, died in 2015 from Greensboro, began participating when he was 10 and became a close friend of the Shriver family. Over the years, Sheets became a highly decorated Special Olympics athlete, winning 250 medals, including seven in the World Games. In 2013, he was inducted into the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame, which is housed at the North Carolina Museum of History. The next article is The History of Political Cartoons by Kathy East, who is the editor of the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine. She learned to read early by reading comic books and the cartoons in the comic section of the Sunday paper, and is still a big fan today. Do you like cartoons? Maybe your family still gets a paper newspaper with a comic section delivered to your front door. Maybe you like reading comic books or watching cartoons or animated films. Graphic novels are cool, too. Often these cartoons are good stories, but mostly just for fun. On these pages, you'll read about political cartoons, which is defined as a drawing, often including a caricature, that makes a comment on politics, politicians, or current events. They're sometimes called editorial cartoons. What makes them different from other cartoons? Keep reading and look closely to find out. Cartoons and freedom of speech. Political cartoons have been a part of American newspapers since the early days of the 13 original colonies. When Founding Father Benjamin Franklin was a young man of 23, he was a printer and newspaper publisher. See the join or die cartoon above? There's a cartoon with a caption, "Look closely at Benjamin Franklin's join or die cartoon," which ran in the Pennsylvania Gazette in 1754. It was a warning to the British colonies in America. What do you think the letters stand for? Can you find NC? What does that stand for? What do you think Franklin was trying to say? Franklin published this cartoon in his newspaper, the Pennsylvania Gazette, on May 9, 1754. It is believed to be the first political cartoon ever to appear in an American newspaper. Political cartoons might make us laugh, often by using caricature, a drawing that exaggerates some features for a comic effect. But they usually do much more. They are written to express an idea or an opinion about things going on in the world, from politics and politicians to local issues and current events. They play a strong role in two important American freedoms, freedom of speech and freedom of the press. In the past, political cartoons were usually found on the editorial pages of newspapers. Today, with social media, they are as easy to find as the phone in our hands. Sometimes old political cartoons can seem weird or be hard to understand. That's because political cartoons often require us to have some background or historical knowledge of the current events of the time. Look at the cartoons on the following pages. Some are old and some are new. See if you can figure out what they're trying to say. Then try creating some of your own. First up, The Cartoon Humor of the Asheville Citizens, Billy Bourne, by David Dry, who is a graduate student in the Department of History at UNC Chapel Hill and a former community college and high school instructor. He's currently working with the Southern Oral History Program as a field scholar. Did you ever try to be funny? It's a serious business. Willis Gustavus Bourne, known professionally as Billy Bourne, said this in 1907. He drew cartoons for the Asheville Citizen newspaper for more than 20 years. Between 1907 and 1928, he sketched more than 6,000 editorial cartoons, and most appeared on the front page of the newspaper. For part of his career, Bourne was the only full-time newspaper cartoonist in all of North Carolina. Bourne's cartoons depict national developments, such as changing presidential administrations and the fight for women's suffrage, and local events, including elections and campaigns to raise money for schools. Bourne often adds a touch of humor with his signature Jaybird character, a playful blackbird who always makes a clever comment. Bourne's artwork reflects his background and culture. Each cartoon provides a snapshot of a moment in history and Bourne's opinion on the important issues of the day. Take a look at these examples and see if you can identify the messages and biases in each of the cartoons. When you are done, check out the Cartoon Asheville website where you can see all of the cartoons of Billy Bourne. That website is at ashevillecartoonist.org. ashevillecartoonist.org. Here are two cartoons by Asheville Citizen cartoonist Billy Bourne. The first one was published before women got the right to vote. The second one was published after. What do you think the cartoonist is trying to say? The first one, before the right to vote, is titled A Graduation Question Answered. And the lady is in a speech saying, "Pray, what will be the destiny of woman? That's our Mary." And on the right, she's washing laundry in the backyard with the pot on the stove steaming, a child tugging at her hem, and laundry hanging on the line, with Jaybird saying, "I'll bet she's glad she studied Latin." That's before the right to vote. After, the cartoon is called There's Trouble Brewing. At the state legislature, there's a lady depicting Asheville women with a petition that says we want a larger school board. She's pounding on the desk with the umbrella handle. And there's a man shaking saying, "He told me to say he's out," whereas the bunkum delegation is hiding behind the desk. The second example is an article called College Humor, Student Cartoonists at Carolina by Linda Jacobson, who manages the exhibits and collections of the North Carolina Collection Gallery on the campus of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Student cartoonists have entertained the UNC Chapel Hill campus community for more than 100 years. Old cartoons help us to understand what it was like to be a college student many years ago, and what students then found amusing, ridiculous, or just plain outrageous. The first student-drawn cartoons at Carolina appeared in yearbooks and humor magazines with playful names such as Yakety Yak and Carolina Boll Weevil. Humor magazines give cartoonists an opportunity to poke fun at fellow students, professors, and campus life. Cartoonists had a lot of material to inspire them in the early 1900s, including on-campus military drills during World War I, and the relationships between male and female students. The Daily Tar Heel, the student newspaper, began featuring student-drawn cartoons on the editorial page in the 1940s. Many Daily Tar Heel cartoonists continued to satirize life on campus, such as woefully limited parking or inadequate student housing. Others provided commentary on a wide range of local, national, and global issues. Frequent subjects included political campaigns and unpopular politicians. Editorial cartoons sometimes upset others on campus who held opposing views. Over the years, the cartoons have differed greatly in drawing style and quality. Removed from the context of their time periods, many of these cartoons are no longer funny to us today. Even so, these cartoons, whether poorly or well-drawn, comical or humorous, or humorless, provide a window into decades of campus life. There are about a half dozen cartoons shown here. First off are a couple about student housing, I guess. It says, in 1907, only a few female students attended Carolina. The male students did not hide the fact that they did not want them there and sometimes refused to sit with them. Even so, by the 1940s, the enrollment of women had increased to 1,000. And the cartoon from 1907 shows a woman sitting by herself and men in the next section crammed in. Co-education as developed at the university. The cartoon from the 40s, there's a student, Chapel Hill bound, and he's dreaming about a beautiful room with a nice bookcase and a lamp and a nice comfortable chair. And then the second frame, Chapel Hill found, the lamp is broken, there's trash on the floor, the drawers missing from the dresser, the chair is turned over, the place is a mess. There's another cartoon from the Carolina Boll Weevil. Freshmen, first-year students were a favorite subject of campus cartoonists in the early 1900s. Upperclassmen considered freshmen as childlike and gullible. But for students living away from home for the first time, first impressions of college life must have been confusing and scary. A cover of the Carolina Boll Weevil, a humor magazine at UNC Chapel Hill, shows the freshman holding a keep off the grass sign, and he's staying on the walkway while the upperclassmen are on the grass laughing at him. Also, an early cartoon making fun of a sleepy student. Well, I guess I'll get a little bit more sleep. What? Not going back to bed? No, I'm going to class. There are three more recent cartoons. Thanks to extremely variable weather patterns in North Carolina, UNC students may go from wearing winter coats and boots one day to shorts and flip-flops the next. That's from 1978. One student's wearing one on the right side of his clothes, winter clothes, and on the left side, summer clothes. And he says, the weather's getting a little ridiculous. Students, faculty, and staff have been struggling to find parking on the UNC campus since the 1950s. This professor has found a solution. This 1969, it says, Professor Zabinansky says he's finally solved the parking problem. He's riding a tricycle. In 1969, cafeteria workers at UNC went on strike to protest low wages and poor treatment. Governor Robert Scott sent the Highway Patrol to campus to restore order. Many at UNC were unhappy about this and thought that neither the university's administration nor the state was helping to solve the workers' problems. There's a trooper, state trooper representing the state, arguing with a man in a suit representing the administration, and they're both standing on the cafeteria worker holding the sign, Workers' Gripes. The 1940s cartoon with the student dreaming and about a nice dorm room and then coming to a mess has a caption. It's actually not just a student, but specifically a GI. After World War II, many veterans enrolled in UNC on the GI Bill. Unfortunately, the university was unprepared for the increase in enrollment. Students were forced to move into overcrowded and inadequate housing facilities. That cartoon is from 1946. There's a Did You Know article that goes with this set of articles. Have you ever seen a donkey or an elephant that looks like these buttons? They have become symbols for our two main political parties, the Democratic donkey and the Republican elephant. Where'd they come from? From political cartoons. The political cartoon at left was drawn by Thomas Nast, the same man who drew what became the iconic images of Santa Claus that you might have seen before. It is believed to be the first time these animals were used to represent the Democratic Party as a donkey and the Republican Party as an elephant. At first, the images were intended to make fun of politicians, but over time, the two political parties adopted them to be their official logos. After going and reading the article about political cartoons, it's only appropriate to read the cartoon feature that is in every Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, Murphy and Manio, Tar Heel Time Travelers. Look, Manio, I'm running for student council. Can I count on your vote? Best man for the job, says on his sign. That's so 90s, so 1890s. 1890s, meaning what? I'm glad you ask. I'm working on a Tar Heel Junior Historian Association Club literary project to celebrate the centennial of the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution. An amendment is a change or update. There have been 27 amendments to the U.S. Constitution since it went into effect in 1789. Come on, says Manteo. I'll show you. Set your time travel app to 1789. The 19th Amendment is about a woman's right to vote. Murphy says, women can vote. Manio replies, they can now, but they couldn't before. What every state decided was only men could vote. For the first 100 years or more of our country, when it came to politics and government, women were not included. The Founding Fathers left it up to the state governments to decide who could vote. In the early days of our country, people thought politics and government were men's business, a woman's place was in the home. Things started to change on July 19, 1848, at a meeting in Seneca Falls, New York, called the Women's Rights Convention. Women who were active in the anti-slavery movement now focused their attention on women's rights, including suffrage. The word suffrage comes from the Latin word suffragium, which means right to vote. Now set your app to 1897. That's when a group of men and women met at the mayor's house in Asheville to form the North Carolina Equal Rights Association, where Helen Morris Lewis was elected association president. The Patton Parker House, built in 1868, is still standing at 95 Charlotte Street in Asheville. Before she was elected president of the North Carolina Equal Rights Association, Helen Morris Lewis was an elocutionist. An elocutionist is someone who is an expert at making speeches. At a congressional committee meeting in Washington, D.C., Helen Morris Lewis gave a speech that summed up the problem. "I want to vote because, as long as women are prevented from legislation, so long will they be cramped and paralyzed by powers over which they have no control." In 1919, the 19th Amendment passed votes in the House of Representatives and the Senate. The last step was ratification by the states. The 19th Amendment says, "The rights of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." What is ratification? After passing votes in Congress, an amendment to the Constitution has to pass another vote or be ratified by 3 out of 4 state legislatures. In 1920, the vote to ratify the 19th Amendment needed one more to pass. That vote would come from either Tennessee or North Carolina. North Carolina legislatures were mostly against it. They sent a telegram to the Tennessee legislatures asking them to vote no and promising North Carolina would do the same. A telegram was a message that was typed on a machine that sent it to a radio signal that then sent it to other telegraph machines far away where it was printed for reading. It was like the first email. Well, Manio says, their plan didn't work. In the summer of 1920, Tennessee voted yes, and the 19th Amendment became the law in every state. Murphy says, that reminds me, I need to get back to winning yes votes for me. By the way, I'm changing my poster to best person for the job. Can I count on your vote? Sorry, Murphy, I'm voting for me. You're running for student council too? That's right. Well, may the best person win. Meaning me, says Manio. No me, says Murphy. No me, says Manio. Shh, says the teacher. Let the voters decide. On the inside back cover, what are you reading? Welcome to the club, the Tar Heel Junior Historian Book Club. Did you enjoy reading about government and politics in this issue? Well, don't stop there. Check out these great books. Look for them in your school or public library. Ask your teacher or librarian for more ideas. Did you know reading is one of the best ways to learn about the world and to learn from many different voices? And that can help you find your voice, so keep reading. That includes We the Kids, Sophia Valdez, Future Prez, Lillian's Right to Vote, Crow, and Shh, We're Writing the Constitution. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.